Chapter 8, Part 2. She'd left her car in the parking lot across from Lizzie and Fitz, opting to enjoy the beautiful day and walk the few blocks over to Grantham Street. Her Mini Cooper was decidedly peppier now that it had been relieved of the moving boxes and bags stuffed into every crevice, but Kate decided she'd like to start getting used to small-town life again, and would walk or bike as much as she could. She'd need to get a bike, for starters. She could even picture it, a bright red, old-fashioned cruiser bike, the kind with two gears and a heavy steel frame that made it inadvisable to cycle anywhere except Pancake Flat, Holland. With a basket on the front spilling over with flowers, and a paper bag from the greengrocer, with a fresh baguette leaning out of it on a jaunty angle. Oh, and she'd wear a pretty summer dress, with a long silk scarf that would flutter out behind her gaily as she pedaled down the street, waving at neighbors and friends. Oh, for God's sake, Malone, this isn't some 1950s pin-up magazine. Or Europe. Get a grip. But she would start walking more, at least. She walked past familiar shops on Main Street, and stepped into a few new establishments, just to check them out and say hello, and then turned down Grantham Street, one of the more grandiose of the Cedar Lake Millionaire's Row streets. Well, Millionaire's Row was a bit of a lofty description for this part of town. Back in the day, it was simply where the town's more affluent denizens had built their houses. And back in the day, that had meant dentists and bank managers, not millionaires. But in keeping with the times, these houses were large, sedate, impressive. Set back a bit from the road, in front of large manicured lawns. Each house was designed slightly differently from its neighbor, but each was a grand dam of a house. Tasteful but imposing red brick or white plaster residences, smugly observing the tree-lined street with a soupçon of haughty ennui. Glassed-in conservatories nestled along the side of a few, and some sheltered smaller versions of themselves. Old coach houses, presumably, set farther back from the house in leafy self-possession among tastefully pruned ornamental trees. They were beautiful specimens of a time long past, when families were large and a prominent clan needed room to entertain the neighbors and to keep servants and to just plain show off. The old trees that had shaded this road for hundreds of years stood quiet sentry over the affluence below, letting sunlight dapple through their crisp leaves and paint the sidewalk with shadow and light. Kate took in each house as she walked by, noticing which features she liked in each. A lovely bay window here, a slick black door with two thin Italian cypress trees posed in perfect symmetry on either side of it there. Every house was neat and tidy, the lawns groomed to look like carpet, the paint fresh and clean, and not so much as a single errant leaf inhabiting the eaves. She slowed her steps as she walked, letting her eyes roam over the neighborhood as a strange and not altogether comfortable nostalgia came over her. Who lived in houses like these? She'd always wondered that, even as a little girl, living in a studio apartment above the hearing aid place with her mom. She'd gaze at the stately homes and wonder about who lived there. She'd imagined smiling moms and dads, beckoning to their bright-eyed kids to stop playing catch on the front lawn and come in for dinner. It would be dinner, too, not supper, as her mother had always called it. For some reason, she always imagined rich families called it dinner. They'd be called in for dinner, where the family would sit around and talk about their day, and make plans for school pageants and science projects, and Halloween costumes, and getting a dog. The dad part was always hardest to visualize for Kate, never having known her own. But based on her friends' fathers, she was able to conjure up a strong, sometimes strict, but always loving male presence, scowling if the horseplay got too rough or the giggling during sleepovers got too loud. The dad figure in her imagination was always the rock of the family, the one everyone counted on for stability and the rule of law, proud of his wife, his kids, and the home he had helped build for them. Thinking of that childish fantasy now, she felt a pang of bitterness that made the day seem less bright. Where had she ever gotten this fantasy dad notion from? Maybe from the Brady Bunch or one of those cheesy 80s sitcoms, because it certainly wasn't a realistic portrait of what men these days all seem to want. At least when it came to her. Sex? Certainly. Companionship? Maybe. Fun? At times. Marriage? Family? A home to build and care for and pass on? Not so much. The men she'd met had all been range-of-the-moment thinkers, never looking beyond next week, refusing to take life seriously. Or, at least, refusing to take it seriously with her. That thought only made the pain worse, though. She was fun. She was passionate. She was sensual. She wasn't all about settling down and finding the best term life insurance for their needs. She liked sex, for God's sake. She just liked it with someone who didn't want to race out the door the second it was over. An image of Lloyd McGill should have arisen at that moment, but to her surprise, it was the heat in Noah Kincaid's gaze that came to mind instead. And when it did, a whole host of other sensations began to tumble through her, too. Noah Kincaid. The epitome of selfish pleasure, the epitome of range-of-the-moment hedonism. The epitome of sex. God, he was incredible. Her own thoughts startled her, as if she'd momentarily looked away and her libido had broken loose and run amok. Visceral memories tormented and thrilled her. The feel of his large, strong body pressed against hers. The taste of his lips, the hum of pleasure murmuring through him as they kissed. That boyish smile, that charming laugh. Those sweet, soulful eyes gazing at her. For one indulgent moment, she let her eyes drift up to one of the large mullioned windows of the house across the street, imagining it as the master bedroom, and picturing Noah making love to her in a sumptuous king-size bed. Slow and sensual, lazily enjoying each other in their own home, with nothing but the smell of fresh coffee from their own kitchen to lure them out of their love nest. She could almost feel it, even just standing out on the street, staring up at this imaginary life that wasn't hers. She could just about feel his powerful arms bracing himself above her, feel his hips thrusting slowly, his muscles flexing and moving as he stroked inside her and kissed her neck. Breathed fast and hard against her ear as they both went over the edge. A little shudder rippled through her at the mere thought. Not quite an orgasm, more like a hot chill. Great, now she wasn't making any sense. What the hell was a hot chill? That shudder of pleasure that makes your stomach flip and your heart pound and the place between your legs grow uncomfortably warm, she thought. The sensation that had trembled through her when Noah had pushed her up against the wall and kissed her. The sensation she swore he'd felt too. Like if they'd gone on for much longer, he might not have even made it to the bed. And wouldn't that have been hot as hell? She shook the thought away with another twinge of regret. There was no point in fantasizing about Noah, because no matter how much she wanted him, no matter how incredible she knew he'd be in bed, he was the complete, utter, exact opposite of what she wanted in a man in almost every conceivable way. And, even better, he was going off to Panama. Because of course he was. Just to rub salt in the wound that was beginning to open up in her inconveniently aroused soul. NMFA. She repeated to herself, closing her eyes and fending off any more hot chills. She would find a serious man and be all oversexed with him. Even if they never got to live in a grand house like these, even if the sun didn't stream into their all-white bedroom and glint off the little diamond-shaped panes of glass as they made love, it would glint off their wedding rings instead. She turned and continued walking. House after house, terracotta driveways and water features, shiny new cars and discreet, elegant signs that read The Gowers or The Clarence Family. Quiet, serene elegance and smug domestic bliss. She was beginning to get sick of it all. And then there was Luna's house. Kate could almost feel the house before she saw it. As she approached the end of the dead-end street, she could sense a subtle change in the surroundings. Like that time she'd gone out fishing with one of her mom's boyfriends when she was 10 or 11, and he'd steered the boat over what had looked like a sharply defined line in the water. On one side of the line, the water had been the light blue-brown it usually was, but on the other side of it, the water had abruptly turned a deep, dark, ominous shade. She'd asked the guy what it meant, and he'd casually told her that it meant the water past the line was much deeper, since the lake bottom dropped off hundreds of feet at that point. This fact had scared the bejesus out of her and made her insist he take them back across the line. She felt a little like that now, irrationally. Maybe it was the distance between the houses down at this end of the dead-end street. Even with considerable frontage, the houses on Grantham Street sat a respectable but consistent distance apart, lending an air of symmetry and order to the neighborhood, at least on the well-trafficked part of the street. But down at this end, the road curved slightly and veered off down a gentle slope and into a wilder, less presentable area, as if it had been an afterthought in some city planner's mind and simply left to trail off into disuse. Even having spent 10 years of her youth in this town, Kate had never been this far down Grantham Street, which probably explained why she'd never heard of Luna or her greenhouse. She'd never bicycled down this part of the street as a kid, because she'd simply never been that curious about what lay beyond Millionaire's Row. Now she could see why it had never called out to her. As a kid, overgrown lots and old abandoned places had held no mystery for her. Not like the shiny homes and happy prosperity of these grand houses had. Down here, an empty lot anchored the right side of the street, and seemed to hint at having once been a house like the others, before some calamity had razed it or torn it down. The lot was overgrown and forlorn, as though it had long ago given up waiting on new owners to give it a home to support once again. And on the left-hand side, snugged almost right up against the street with virtually no front lawn to be seen, was Luna's house. Kate stopped for a moment and gazed at it, feeling an odd, familiar tingle ripple through her. She'd never seen this place before, she was sure of it, but something about it, it reminded her of something. Her eyes roamed over the large, two-story brick house, taking in the dull windows that had lost their shine, the grimy brick, the fading paint on the shutters. The brick was broken and crumbling in a few places, and the sagging front porch looked weather-worn and unstable. Shrubs and bushes grew wild and haphazard, obscuring one downstairs window almost entirely, and the whole place looked like it was ready to just lean over slowly and lie down. And then she knew what it reminded her of. The house on Sycamore Street, from It's a Wonderful Life. The old run-down pile where Mary and George Bailey spent their wedding night. The old house where they raised their family and made a home. And just like that, she was in love. She crossed the street and stood in front of the house, marveling at how similar it was to the house in the movie, right down to the broken window in the upper right corner and the ornate railings that topped the porticos braced along the front. It really was in terrible shape. The front porch looked like you'd put your foot through the boards if you dared step up there, and the wooden fence that bordered the sidewalk was almost horizontal, having waved and wobbled into a large S-shape over the years, instead of the rail-straight structure it had once aspired to be. It wasn't as large as the house in the movie, from what Kate could recall of it anyway, but it was just as stately, and just as faded and unloved. Clearly, Luna, whoever she was, hadn't lived here in years, and the old house had been left to simply settle into an undignified decline. Kate didn't care. Fences could be mended, windows could be fixed, and a lick of paint would do wonders for the old place. But what really sealed it for her was the greenhouse. Tucked along the right side of the house, almost obscured by yet more abundant greenery, what had once been a small conservatory peeked through the foliage, its empty glass panes seeming to grin at her like a kid with missing teeth. Kate actually sucked in her breath when she saw it, and found herself moving towards it, almost as if pulled, stepping gingerly through the uneven ground of the side yard to pick her way towards it through the long grass. She'd never thought of converting a sunroom into a greenhouse, but obviously someone had, and they'd done a great job of it, too. The brick foundation had been replaced with a steel structure into which panes of glass had been fitted. Most of the glass was now gone, leaving the empty steel shells behind, and inside the space, old wooden shelves and tables were strewn with debris and overgrowth. An old ladder with broken rungs leaned precariously against the main wall, and old green planters lay around, along with a collection of beer bottles and other various hooligan detritus. She moved carefully through the doorway, noticing someone had fitted an old screen door that now hung loosely by one straining hinge and looked ready to collapse. She stood in the center of the mess, looking all around her, imagining how easy it would be to clear it out and turn it into the perfect greenhouse. Despite all the junk and debris, it still smelled earthy and lush, as though years of growing green things beneath its glass panels had imprinted on the place and left a lingering aroma of plants and dirt, of loam and peat, and the fragrance of blossoming life. It was a bit more compact than typical greenhouses, but it would be more than enough for her needs. There was even another doorway midway along the wall it shared with the house, meaning she could access the greenhouse from inside and not have to go outside in the snow or rain. It was perfect. She stood among the debris and hugged herself, her mind gleefully tumbling over all the steps she'd have to take to make this work. She'd have to find out where Luna was living now, if she was even still alive, and how she could arrange to rent out the space from her. She'd have to hire a building inspector to check the structure, too. What if the building was condemned? Was there a way to uncondemn something? She was pretty sure George and Mary Bailey had just been able to move into their charming little dump of a house and start spit-roasting chickens in the fireplace while the rain poured in through holes in the roof, but that was unlikely to be an option these days. Maybe if she went to the town assessor's office, she could find out more about the house, maybe even get a peek inside. It couldn't be that difficult to take over an abandoned property, could it? Especially if she located Luna or her heirs and arranged to rent it from them? Or maybe even buy it outright? A little flush of hope warmed her, a wildly optimistic one that she'd normally chase away as being too fanciful. What were the odds that she'd find the perfect greenhouse, the perfect house, a place that was right out of her favorite movie and just crying out for a new family to call it home? Was it even distantly possible that this old house could be the start of something wonderful? Usually you found your husband first, and then had your kids, and then found your dream fixer-upper. But so what if things happened a little out of order? Just then, the door to the house creaked open behind her. Kate whirled around to see a small, frail, bright-eyed woman of at least 90 standing in the doorway, smiling at her.
"Well, hello there," said Luna.